applications for the very kind hospitality. I'm going to talk about switching boxes connection in operational theories and its consequence on causality. And this is a report about some recent some research we did in the recent months in collaboration with Mauro D'Ariano and Giulio. Okay, here is an outline of what I will say in the talk. I will start by a very brief review of the operational framework, since Giulio already spent a lot of time on that. And so the framework will be exactly the one introduced by Giulio, with all the assumptions, basically causality, on which I will spend some words because it's very important within the talk, and also purification and local discriminability. Then I will talk about maps from transformations to transformations, and how they help us in constructing theories without the causality property. So in the end, we would like to study the hierarchy of maps that you can define by defining maps on transformations, and then maps on maps, and so on and so forth. You can build a whole hierarchy of maps. And the first layer of these maps, which is the one that comes from the definition of maps from transformation to transformations, leads to a theory which is non-causal, but every circuit in the theory can be simulated by a circuit in a causal theory. While things are different if we go on defining other maps. However, before defining the whole hierarchy, which we couldn't succeed in characterizing and classifying yet, I start from the definition of a sub-hierarchy, which is what we call comps, and show you the realization theorem. So we know that for this sub-hierarchy, there's a realization theorem, which is very simple within the causal framework. And then I will try to define maps from comps to comps, which is the difficult task. And I will show you the problems that are arise in this in trying to define these objects. But also, I will try to show you that there's a strong motivation to study these objects, because there are very simple primitives that require the definition of maps of this kind. And then I will conclude with some considerations about these higher order maps and the fact that they lead to theories that cannot be simulated in a simple way by circuits on the first level. So this is a very different property from the first layer of maps from transformations to transformations. So the operational framework, as you already saw in Giulio's talk, this slide is basically an introduction of circuitry that I will use along in my slides. So we have states, transformations, and effects, and systems, which are labels for the wires of these boxes. And once we have the labels, we have rules for the composition. We can define sequential compositions. We will have also outcomes that are the classical information that we can extract from some operation. And we define parallel composition of systems. And once we have parallel composition of systems, we can define parallel composition of boxes and also bipartite boxes, which act on composite systems. And okay, these are all very intuitive concepts, and by the way, Giulio already explained them. An important and non-trivial thing is that is this one, that we have the trivial system, and we define transformation from the trivial system to another system as a preparation, a state. And vice versa, a transformation from a system to the trivial one is an effect or a measurement, depending on the nomenclature. And this is very useful because it allows us to think every elementary object in the operational theory as a transformation. So also states and effects have the same nature as transformation, as boxes. They only have some trivial input or output. So on top of operational theories, we can have a probability, which describes the whatever is the probability to see outcomes in the in an experiment in a chain of boxes, an experiment composed by a chain with a sequential composition of boxes, and we know we define this chain as a probability, as a number between 0 and 1. And the deterministic chain, which is the collection of all possible outcomes, must be associated to a probability which is equal to 1. So now we have this causality property, which can be interpreted in this way. So suppose that we have a chain, then we can cut it in any bipartition we want. And this is equivalent to dividing the chain into a composite preparation and a composite measurement. So this is an elementary experiment. And the causality property requires that whatever are the probabilities of the couple of outcomes, the probability of seeing outcome I in the preparation is independent on the choice of box at the measurement stage. So I can define this marginal probability, I marginalize on the joint probability of I and J, and what I get is normally, since here I have the effects, I have a probability which depends on A, which is the global test that I choose, but I don't want the marginal probability to depend on this choice. Otherwise, of course, someone, if I trivially interpret the input-output arrow as the time arrow, this implies that someone in the future can choose some particular test and change my margin in such a way that he can communicate backwards in the past. So an equivalent formulation that I like very much, it's very elegant, of causality is the uniqueness of the deterministic effect. As Giulio proved in his talk, these two statements are equivalent. Or otherwise, there are some other equivalent statements. For example, the existence of prior probabilities for preparation events, which are exactly those marginals that I showed you in the first line. Or the fact that normalized states are a base for the cone. So everything which is in the cone of states can be interpreted as a normalized state rescaled by a positive parameter. Or you have unrestricted conditioning. This means that you can do conditional tests in however you want, and you don't run into inconsistencies. So this is a property of theories with causality. While in theories where you don't have causality, you can define conditioning, but then you can run into troubles with probabilities which can be bigger than one or strange things happening. So in causal theories, we define deterministic channels or deterministic transformations or channels, sorry, as those channels that preserve the unique deterministic effects. And the property of being deterministic is very helpful in classifying the hierarchy of higher order maps, as you will see soon. So in causal theory, we can have networks, and as I told you before, everything that happens on the right-hand side cannot influence outcomes, probabilities of outcomes on the left-hand side. So you can imagine that a theory without causality can look somehow weird, but I will show you that it can be useful to define it and can lead to interesting results. And so the second assumption that I consider on the side of causality is purification. So the theory is purifiable if for every state, for every system, there exists a conjugate system. So this is purification with conjugate systems. There is a fixed conjugate system satisfying the axioms that Julian produced, such that for every state of the system A, there exists a pure state of the composite system, such that rho is the marginal of the purification. And as a consequence, all channels have an extension, have a dilation, which is through a reversible transformation, and also tests have dilation, which is obtained instead of marginalizing on the extending system, just measuring, and conditionally on the outcome I have a post-selected realization of the transformation Ti.
Was it important that you'd assume the existence of conjugate systems to get that conclusion?
No, not at all.
So this
can be derived in a framework where we just have purification.
Right.
However, I assume for simplicity the purification of conjugate systems, because then I am going to prove more complicated results in which this is much easier. And actually, we didn't think about possibility of relaxing the hypothesis yet, because it takes a while to fix all the theorems. But this is just for the sake of simplicity, because I'm not focusing on relaxing assumptions on the basic theory, and I want to go to higher order. And then local discriminability. So if you have two different states, bipartite states, you can discriminate among them just by local measurements. So there exists a couple of effects A and B, such that their statistics is different on the two states. So here I have a diagram representing all the assumptions and their intersections. So we know that quantum mechanics should lie in the triple intersection because it enjoys all the assumptions, namely it has purification with unique, which is unique up to reversible transformations, and it has local discriminability, and it is causal. Then we have classical mechanics, which doesn't enjoy purification, so it lies in this intersection of discriminability and causal theories. And then we have also this real beat, which are two versions of real matrices. In one case, we have the ones with purification that don't have local discriminability, which is the case of just the theory of real matrices, real positive definite matrices. And on the other side, if we want to enforce local discriminability, then we have to drop the purifiability. But then we don't know anything about the upper intersection, the intersection between theories with purification and local discriminability, but that are not causal. So starting from something which lies in this intersection, that may be quantum mechanics or even something else, I will show you how to construct an example of an object lying in the upper intersection.
Hello.
Yes?
Can you say again what rebit 2 was? This real theory.
Rebit 2? Yes, if you add just... So you want local discriminability instead of purification. So you...
Isn't that the maximal tensor problem?
Yes, it's the maximal tensor product of two real systems. So instead of taking all the positive matrices, you take also some negative matrices in such a way that you can have local discriminability, but you don't have the uniqueness of purification.
What do you mean, like convex theories in this case?
Well, these are all operational theories with some state which has a probability different from 0 or 1. So as Giulio showed before, this leads very naturally to a convex framework. So
this is a theory with convex state space.
Yes.
So why is classical mechanics not a theory of purification?
But classical mechanics cannot be purified because you have just a finite number of pure states, which are the perfectly discriminable states. So it's usually the convex set of states is a simplex.
Yes.
And you have a continuum of fixed states.
Yes, you cannot have a continuum of purifications, because also bipartite states must be a simplex. Another way to see
probabilities in classical mechanics, so there is always some larger system. We could say everything about it would have pure state.
But
it's not finite dimensional anymore.
It must be pure. Yes. it should not, if you have some pure set from which you get the probabilities as a marginal, it should not be a finite dimensional one.
It's not finite dimensional.
Even then, it's not possible.
Yeah.
Pure state, it can't be correlated to anything else.
Yeah.
Pure bipartite states are just product states.
Another way. Another way of seeing that classical mechanics cannot be purified is that, in theory, with purification, you have just we have that the identity map is indecomposable. It's an atomic map. While in classical mechanics, it is not, because you can measure all the discriminable states and re-prepare them. And you get the identity, but each event of measure and re-prepare is an atomic map. So you can decompose the identity. And this rules out the possibility of having classical mechanics within the theory with purification. So in theories with purification, we have this nice Choi-Yamankowski correspondence, which is a correspondence between transformations and bipartite states. So if I have a faithful state, the purification of any internal state, then when I apply a transformation locally, I will get a bipartite state, which is in one-to-one correspondence with the transformation. So if I stick to the deterministic transformations, then, of course, I cannot have that any bipartite state correspond to a deterministic transformation, because of course its marginal on the output system must be equal to the marginal of the faithful state. But still the cons coincide, and this means that whenever I have a bipartite state, it corresponds at least to a probabilistic transformation. So if it has this property that its marginal is the state, it's the corresponding transformation is deterministic. Otherwise, it's a probabilistic transformation. But there is no bipartite state that does not correspond to any transformation according to this correspondence. And this is very important, because this allows us to identify the cons of transformations and bipartite states. So now, what I would like to define is transformations on transformations, maps on transformations. So black boxes, they take a transformation as an input and maybe give some outcome and prepare some other transformation as an output. So I think that Choi-Yamankowski isomorphism is helps a lot in this direction, because we have a correspondence between transformations and states, and then the black box should be in correspondence with a bipartite transformation. Now, I don't want wild transformations, for example, nonlinear ones. We have to impose some admissibility conditions on the maps we are interested in. And the reasonable admissibility conditions are very simple. You can recognize them to be very similar to the ones we have in quantum mechanics, or also for states. So linearity must be imposed, because we want the preservation of convex combinations. And then we have something which I call complete positivity, because it is exactly the corresponding property for the transformation. When I see a bipartite channel is a four-partite state, using Choi-Yamankowski, when I apply locally the transformation on some part of the channel, I should get something which corresponds to still to a state. So this is complete positivity. And then I'm interested in transformations that preserve the normalization. So whenever they get a channel as an input, they should provide the channel as an output. And the normalization theorem that we proved is that upon these admissibility conditions, the black box is just equivalent to this circuit. So for any black box enjoying these properties, you have some circuit, some corresponding circuit, in such a way that the transformation performed by the black box can be implemented just inserting the channel in this circuit. And what you get is an output channel, the overall channel, which is corresponding to the output. So in a very similar way, I can define probabilistic black boxes with an outcome, and I can prove that their implementation is very similar. I just have some freedom to measure an ancilla. And post-selecting on the outcome, I get the transformation. And the implementation scheme is always the same. I have to put my box in this circuit. So now you can imagine how I construct a theory which is non-causal, because here I have an input, which is my blue box, and a transformation, which is the gray circuit. So the line going from the input to the output is not the causal line. And you can understand this because the probability of something occurring, the probability of having, if this box is not deterministic but is probabilistic, the probability of seeing some outcome does not only depend on something which happens in the future, but also on the states that I put in the past. So if I construct a theory in which states are channels, I don't have, I have an input-output structure which is not causal. The input-output line is not the timeline. So it is useful to define testers, which are the effects of this theory, as you will see soon. So they are just measurement on transformations. I want a measurement on a transformation such that it provides me a probability distribution of outcomes when the input is the black box. And since the probability can be seen as a transformation on a trivial system, this measurement is just something that takes a transformation which is the blue box to a transformation of the trivial system. So it is a particular case of supermap, in which the two output, the input, the overall input and overall output wire are the trivial system. So the realization theory works for free, and it says that I just have to devise a circuit like this, in which I prepare a bipartite state and I measure a bipartite measurement. And this is the implementation of the measurement on the channel. So the most general measurement of a channel is made in this way. So now we have supermaps that correspond to transformations on bipartite states. And since I can apply Choya-Minkowski also on these transformations, I have Choya-Minkowski also for supermaps. They are in correspondence with states. So the deterministic ones are in correspondence with some particular states. And being deterministic is enforced by saying that shields and A should be E, should be the deterministic effect. When I measure the deterministic effect, when I marginalize on system A, I should get the marginal of the faithful state for B on B, and something which is the state corresponding to a channel on the remaining system. So this is the condition for the state to represent a normalized supermap.
Can you show us the previous slide so we can remember what A, B, C, and D are?
Yes, I didn't put any labels, but in this case, it should be that A is this one, B is this one, C and D. So this means that if I measure here, the deterministic effect is transferred here, and then I have something which is just a channel. Okay, sorry. I wanted to remark that even though, as in the case for channels, the deterministic supermaps are in correspondence only with some particular states, which are the ones that enjoy this property, still I can prove that the cones of four-partite states and supermaps coincide. So for every four-partite states, there is a suitable rescaling such that this can fit within a test. Within a probabilistic, this represents a probabilistic supermap that is contained within a test. So it can be added to, you can add to this state some other state in such a way that you get a normalized one. So here's how I construct the second order theory. Instead of having just elementary system types, my new system types are of kind A, R, or B. And the states of a system A, R, or B is just a transformation from system A to system B. The transformations in this new theory are transformation of type A over B over C over D, and these are supermaps. And the effects in this theory are measurements on channels are testers. And since the property of the tester to be deterministic is the deterministic effect in this theory is in relation with a deterministic test, a tester, I can prove that the causality is not granted because the deterministic testers are made in this way. Since this is the unique deterministic effect, it's the tensor product of two different deterministic effects on the systems. And this means that once I marginalize this state, I just get some state and a deterministic effect. And of course, for at each different state, I have a different tester, deterministic tester. So the deterministic effect in this theory is not unique. I have one different deterministic effect for any different state in the basic theory. So unless this state is unique, which is the case of a trivial theory, I have a non-causal theory. And
so Pablo, sorry, I'm wondering if maybe you could slow down a little bit because I'm finding it very difficult to keep up with you. Uh-huh. So could you go over this argument again? If I didn't really follow.
The argument?
Yeah. What you just said now, if you could just go over it again a bit more slowly.
Okay, since the basic theory from which we started is causal, then the deterministic effect for the bipartite system is unique. And it is, in particular, the composition of the two deterministic effects for the two systems. So this means that I have a deterministic effect marginalizing this psi, and the other one remaining here. So here I have the marginal of psi, and here I have the deterministic effect. Okay. So all objects like this represent a deterministic effect in the theory where states are channels. So the new theory in which states are channels has a non-unique deterministic effect, because everything which corresponds to a circuit like this is a deterministic effect for my new theory.
For any channel you put inside the hole, you get one. It's the idea of this scheme being a deterministic effect.
Yes. Of course, for every channel you put here, you get one. But if you put here some probabilistic transformation, then the probability depends on what is the state. So every different effect has a different behavior on some state, which is on some box that I plug in there. So now we have a theory which is non-causal. I can draw circuits within these theories. So the red states are actually channels, and the blue and the gray are supermaps. And even though the theory is non-causal, I can perfectly simulate it in the first order theory, where these are channels. This is a supermap of this kind, and the gray one is another supermap of this kind. So this circuit is exactly the implementation of that circuit on the second level. So even though the theory is non-causal, I can perfectly simulate it by a causal circuit. So here we have the first answer to the question, which is, are we something in this intersection? The answer is yes, we have supermaps. And more generally, comms. I will define comms just starting from the next slide, but here I write comms just to put something there. And comms are the generalization, the immediate generalization of supermaps. So what are comms? I define these maps in a recursive way. So I start from first order. The one comb is a transformation within a causal theory with purification. And then I define recursively this hierarchy of maps. An n comb is a transformation from an n minus one comb to a one comb. Since the one comb is a channel, the output of this transformation should always be within the set of transformations. And of course, the two comb is a supermap because its input is a one comb, which is a channel, and its output is a channel. So we already know this, what is a two comb. But then I define a whole hierarchy of other objects, and I will show you in a while that they can be implemented by a straightforward generalization of this circuit, the one for the two columns. So I exploit the Choi-Yang-Nikoski isomorphism, and since I can prove that at any level a comb is in correspondence with states, an n plus 1 comb is still a transformation, and then a state itself. And then I impose on the comb the admissibility conditions, which are linearity. It should be a linear transformation. It should be completely positive, namely when I see it as a transformation on states. It should preserve the cone of states even if it is applied locally. And it should be deterministic in a sense which is also recursive. So deterministic one combs are channels. Deterministic supermaps are the ones that preserve the deterministic property, and so on and so forth. An n comb is deterministic if it takes an n1 minus 1 deterministic comb into a deterministic channel. So by the admissibility conditions, I can prove that any comb corresponds to a circuit like this. And its action on an n minus 1 comb is just the link of the two circuits in this way. So as you see, the blue circuit is the input, the gray circuit is the transformation, and then when I link them, I get an overall channel, which is the output. So also here, I have a Choi-Yang-Nikoski correspondence that tells me almost everything I need to know about combs. They are in correspondence with multipartite states. The deterministic ones enjoy a property which is a generalization of the one of supermaps. Namely, if I apply the deterministic effect here, I will get the marginal of the faithful state on An and something which represents an n minus 1 comb. So even though they are only the deterministic one are only some particular multipartite states, the cones of these multipartite states and the cone of combs coincide. So I have for every state in this set, I have a probabilistic comb which corresponds to the state. So what we prove essentially is that it's the equivalence of combs and circuits, in the sense that every comb's transformation can be simulated by a causal circuit. And on the other hand, any transformation, every circuit that performs any input-output transformation, and in this described by a circuit, then it implements a comb transformation. So for example, suppose that I consider this circuit, and some part of the circuit is the input. So some boxes are variables, and I want to know what happens when I change them. So the output is what happens when I change the boxes. Then I can see this circuit as partitioned in this way, and these are two combs. So the comb is a very general object that provides me a tool for analyzing all computations that happen within a circuit, within an elementary circuit like this. This is the case, for example, for quantum computation. So the tester formalism provides me a tool for optimizing computations. For example, any quantum algorithm, at least in my knowledge, that there may be some very exotic algorithms that don't work in this way, but the main ones work in this way. I have some oracle, I plug it within a circuit that performs a measurement, and the outcome of the measurement should provide me some information about some class to which the oracle belongs. So optimizing the algorithm means just optimizing the tester that performs this discrimination of families. However, we are not satisfied yet. We want to study higher order maps. So let's start defining maps from an M comb to an M, from an M comb to an M comb. So as you will see soon, these are very difficult to define. We can consider the M comb as an input variable X, and the M comb, which is the output, is denoted by GX. But now we want to remember that a comb is defined as a transformation. So gx is a function. And gx is a function that is applied to y, which is an m minus 1 comb. So the having a map from an n comb to an m comb allow me to define a function of a couple of combs, x and y, which is defined as gx applied to y. So in order to classify maps from m combs to m combs, I have to classify all the maps on couples of combs. And this is a very difficult task. I will show you why. Because we don't know what is a couple of combs. Actually, if I have a couple of combs, I can define another comb by just a juxtaposition. For example, take this one and this one. I put them one next to the other. And what I get is a comb with four teeth, a very particular one which doesn't exploit any memory between the second and the third. But I can also define other combs just switching some teeth. This is perfectly fine because this behaves as a causal channel, exactly in the way I want it to work. So I can define a lot of different objects using a couple of combs. Now, if I fix one ordering, I can define a map on combs with this ordering. For example, a map on objects which are the generalization of these couples, all the ones that have also memory here. A map on these combs is a legitimate map on this couple. However, it's not a legitimate transformation for these combs. So what happens is that I can have two different maps. The blue one, which is legitimate for that ordering, and the white one, which is legitimate for the other ordering. But now, if I define their convex combination, I get a map which is a legitimate transformation of the couple, but it's not a comb anymore. So what kind of transformation is this one? This is just a convex combination of two objects, and it's very difficult to classify all of these maps.
Can you repeat what it was, what feature, what sort of comb would be legitimate for acting on the left but not on the right?
Because
on the former slide,
in this case, I have the blue one is a transformation on four combs, which have a definite causal ordering, which goes from 0 to 1 to 2 to 3. Okay, so if I consider the state corresponding to the blue comb, I have a condition which goes starting from 3, then I get some decomposition of the state when I apply the deterministic effect on the last input. I get some smaller comb, and I go on tracing on the output of 2. And then I get a smaller comb and I trace on the output of 1, and so on and so forth. I marginalize. When I do the same for this map, I don't have a comb of the same nature because here the order in which I do the sequence of marginalization is different. I start from 3, but then I go directly to 1, and then I come back to 2, and then I go to 0. So they satisfy two different conditions. So they are both well-defined for the couple, but if I convexly combine them, they are not combs. They don't satisfy any overall rule of this kind. So they separately do, their convex combination doesn't. So the problem, as you see, is that when we define combs, we know that they are in correspondence with states. So higher order maps, that means maps from combs to combs, are still transformation from a set of states to another set of states. But we would like to know what are the deterministic higher order maps, and we don't know which one they are. We don't have any condition on the restricted class of states that represent normalized higher order maps, deterministic higher order maps. However, we know that the combs coincide. So, as I told you, all we know is that deterministic higher order maps are in correspondence with some class of multipartite state, a restricted one that we don't know. We would like to know something more about this restricted class. And but we know also that from purification, all the purifications of such states are also representatives of legitimate transformations from combs to combs. But since they are purifications, so I showed you an example before in which we had a convex combination of two different states. If I now purify it, I cannot interpret the new object as a convex combination. So we don't have, we know that these maps are not combs. They could be convex combinations of combs, but that's not all, because I can have something which is the purification of a convex combination, and since it's a pure, it cannot be interpreted as a convex combination. So we don't really have any idea what are these maps up to now. And another question on side of classification, which is the big open issue, is what of these maps can we admit as legitimate? So as you will see in the next slides, there are some primitives that allow to have an indication of what should happen. So take suppose we are in a determinist in a operational theory with purification and everything, local discriminability, and I define a protocol like this. So you have some input bit which you can measure, and conditionally on the output you have two back boxes, and you want to construct a circuit by connecting them in some order, like G after F, or if the value of the bit is zero, in the reverse order, G F after G. So this is a map on these two black boxes. This is linear. It has all the nice properties that we expect. But it cannot be represented as a circuit. So this is an example of these higher order maps. In particular, it would be a map from channels to supermaps, in the simplest case. So I can prove a no-switch theorem. So this switch algorithm cannot be implemented within a circuit. Because suppose that the circuit existed, so I have a system here on whose state I can encode the value of the bit X, which can be either 0 or 1 or whatever. And I have a circuit that behaves like this. When I encode 0, I get this circuit as an output, and when I encode 1, I get this circuit as an output. Then what would happen if I plugged in the circuit only some local part of two swap operators? So the swap just swaps these two systems. It makes A go to here and B go to here. If I relabel the systems, it acts as two parallel identities, one from A to A and the other one from B to B. So if I plug two swaps in this circuit and I prepare the state encoding 0, what I get is that I should connect C to B, but I should preserve the ordering of these two channels. And so if I use that representation for the swap, I get this circuit. And as you see, I have a time loop here. So I can prove that this circuit does not represent anything physical, because the states that come up from this circuit are not normalized in general. So this map cannot be represented by a circuit. On the other hand, if we have a time loop, we can produce a circuit for the switch. So there's really an equivalence. If I can do the switch by a circuit, I can do a time loop. If I have a time loop, I can do a circuit for the switch. So time loops can be described in different ways. For example, using Deutsch model, which was devised within quantum mechanics, but can be extended to any operational theory. And the basic idea in the model is that if I have a time loop, I have to impose some consistency on the boundary conditions. And this means that the input state here should be equal to the output state here. So this model is nice. Deutsch uses it to prove some that time loops have some that don't violate some principles, but they have the problem that they are not nonlinear. So if I have a time loop like this in a circuit, the transformation from here to here is nonlinear. And by the way, if you use this model to to represent the time loop in the switch circuit, you don't get what you expect to have, namely the functions applied in these different orders to the input. So the other model of time loop that is the one that we think is better to use, in, at least in this case, is the teleportation from the future, so some post-selected time loop. However, also this one has a drawback, that is within a causal theory, we introduce some non-causal effect. Because in order to have deterministic teleportation, we have to rescale by the probability of teleportation. And once we rescale this effect, we get something which is non-causal, some effect which is bigger than the deterministic one. So is there a way of recovering the switch without dropping either linearity or causality? The answer we propose is this one. It's not a definite answer to the question because it introduces some other problems, but smaller than these ones. So the idea is that we should change the way in which we represent the resource. So the resource was, the input of the switch was, apart from the control bit, a couple of boxes, a couple of transformations. So the idea is that whenever you have a couple of transformations, and you can control their ordering, you should represent them not as two independent boxes, but as a comb, like this. So here you have the control, and this comb works in this way. If you encode 0 here, then this channel is G and this one is F. And if here you encode 1, you have F and G here. So this comb is very simple. It's a legitimate comb. It's a supermap, which has a very simple representation. And the switch is very simply implemented by just by putting the identity there and tracing away the control system. However, we are requiring something very strong here. So not only that the oracle should be represented in this way, but notice that here I don't trace away, I don't throw away the control system on this side. And this means that if F and G are unitary, for example, the output of this channel in general upon inputs, pure input states would be a pure state. So it preserves purity. And this means that, for example, in a quantum mechanical interpretation, if you have an oracle like this, you cannot have not only the two alternate orderings, but also some entanglement of the system with the orderings. This is a big Schrodinger cat. So it seems to work fine, but now I want to point out some problems. The first one is the following, that if the input and output system for boxes F and G are different in this way, such that the connection of G after F is well-defined because B is equal to B, and also the other way around, but A is different from B, then the comb that I define has wires that are not well-defined. So the labels for these systems are not definite. They depend on the system that I plug, on which I encode X. So there is something related to the structure of this circuit which depends on the box that comes here. And suppose now that I want to represent an higher order theory in which inputs states are combs and outputs are combs. Then I represent the switch in this way. So the inputs are those two states, red and blue, and the higher order map is represented by the gray box. Then what I have is this strange convex combination. I don't have any diagram to represent the output of this map. So even though I construct this theory of higher order theory on top of a causal theory, when I try to describe the circuits that I get, I cannot draw them in as causal networks in the first order theory, because I need to something to represent these convex combinations in a diagrammatic way as boxes, as just connections of boxes. And this is a problem already for a convex combination. The things are even worse if I consider the purification of this alternative. So, concluding, I think that what we can draw from our switch example is that there is something important that is still missing in a general operational theory with all the axioms that we have. And the problem is that we cannot describe elementary primitives like the switch. So this is a very simple algorithm. So in operational terms, it's very well defined. It's very simple, but it cannot be represented within the theory without adding some extra ingredient. And one problem is conditioning, is that we don't have, as you pointed out during Julia's talk, we don't have a thorough way of representing the conditioning within causal theories. But this is just one part of the problem. The other one is that we have to change the interpretation of independent transformations, and not all of them can be represented by independent boxes. They should be, for example, represented as channels with some memory. And so these are the minimal requirements for a theory in which I can represent all higher order maps within circuits, because the underlying conjecture is that all I need to represent are controlled permutations. So this is a conjecture that we are thinking about may be true, that the controlled permutations of boxes are the only primitives that we need to go to this, to represent all these higher order maps. So I finished here. Thank you for your attention.
So you showed the theory of Kohn is not causal, but basically we can somehow simulate a causal side. And the Asperger is sort of the trick is similar to the changing Schrödinger picture into the Eigen picture. So we can have some Schrödinger picture and we can translate into the Eigen picture. More or less. You somehow open into these two sides, right?
Well, I don't know whether.
My question is do you have some study on the change of the computational complexity when we change these pictures?
No, actually, we discussed exactly this point with Scott Aronson last week, and we have some questions because we don't know. We are not computer scientists, so the question is: have these theories with higher order maps some computational power which is higher than the ones than the one of quantum computers? And apparently Scott Aronson seems to be skeptical about this. We don't know what we should say. But for example, I can tell you that in order to implement the permutation of boxes.
Yeah, but I'm just putting out this comb.
Combs. Yeah, no, combs. Sorry. Combs just represent circuits. Right. So everything you can do with combs, you can do with circuits. So they are just another representation of what you can do with quantum computers.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm asking the change of the computational complexity. If I just regard this is just this contraction of the tensors, and this could be something to do with, say, for example, the stabilizer formalism. If we somehow see the somehow dynamics of the stabilizer in Schrödinger picture, this is a bit complicated. But the trick of the stabilizer formalism is that we can somehow efficiently follow the somehow dynamics if we see in the Heisenberg picture.
Yes, but well, I don't think that combs can be helpful in simplifying in lowering the complexity class of some
problem. I'm afraid it could be other way around. Actually, this is a general theory. And you are kind of basically you have somehow the simulation of the original non-causal theory, but somehow you are increasing some complexity to simulate the causal theory.
Yes, but you can go the other way around. So anything that can be computed by a quantum computer or a computer within an operational theory, which is implemented by a circuit, can be represented as a comb. So the many inputs become just one input if you go to the comb representation. So with combs, you simplify the complexity class, but it's just a trick. It's just that instead of saying that you have n calls to the oracles, you have just one call because the oracle is made with n channels. So I don't think that comb theory will tell anything new about complexity.
So, you know, in terms of digest what you said about the spectrum, this G thing. So clearly, I can build a machine that could do this, I think. So, for example, I would have there's two boxes, one the F box and the G box, and I put on some kind of bar, which pivots. And then, when I send in this control bit, it causes the bar to either stay where it is or rotate.
Yeah.
And I could build this machine and put it inside another thing. Now, your theorem implies that such a machine could not be described in the circuit model.
But if you describe the boxes as independent boxes.
What is independent?
But if the resource having F and G is represented by the box F and the box G, red and blue, then you cannot describe this machine as a circuit.
But in the fixed order, single use.
So what?
Fixed order, if you use two uses.
Of the boxes.
Okay.
But, yes, but.
Okay. So.
Sorry?
So this is single use.
Yes, you can use the box only a single time. But of course,
the
your machine.
That the mechanical machines that I can perfectly well build. Cannot be described in the circuit model. It indicates that for very basic reasons, the circuit model must be lacking. Just a lever, sort of something that causes it to rotate one way or another.
Something like the Schrödinger cat experiment. Instead of having the.
This is not even Schrödinger's cat, this is just something I could go back home, I could come back in. In my case, 5 hours' time. Put this machine on the table, when you make it out of wood and nails and things like that.
Yes, okay. The classical one.
The classical one, it's not difficult.
Yes. No, of course. Yeah. That's why I say that the switch is very elementary, because we all trivially think that it's feasible. But we cannot describe it as a circuit.
So at one point, you described how, despite the fact that these supermaps were non-causal, so I could represent them as a circuit with states, and then it would be a non-causal circuit.
Mm-hmm.
I could also represent it instead in terms of cones acting on channels, and then I would have a causal interpretation.
Yes.
So what it left me wondering was whether, is it the case, how generic of a set of data could you reinterpret it in a causal way?
No.
So, I give you some data, and you start by saying, I'm going to assume there's perturbations and measurements. Oh, it doesn't work. It's non-causal.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm going to, say this data, that didn't correspond to a perturbation. It corresponded to a cone. And could you always get a causal interpretation
with any
data?
This is a very good question. Actually, it would be nice to prove something like this. I don't think it's true in general. You can invent some non-causal theory, which maybe has no way, in no way can be described as the connection of some causal boxes in a causal theory. But we don't know anything about that, because, of course, non-causal theories can be whatever. So we constructed some starting from at least some intuition from the causal theory with boxes, and then we went backwards. So in this case, it's very simple. But if you have a general non-causal theory, proving that it is always can be always redescribed in terms of a causal one is very difficult. For example, if you have just these higher order maps, then I don't think, unless you add some more ingredients to the causal theory, I don't think you can go back. So this is another very trivial example, counter example to this conjecture. But I don't know. I think in general you cannot. But it's just a guess.
Any more questions?